Call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
As the old saying goes, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. But if you give him a Berkey system, you give him the ability to obtain purified water for a lifetime. This year, when giving Christmas gifts, instead of unwanted trinkets, give a meaningful and substantial gift. Berkey systems are ideal for every member of your family, especially the young ones in college. Unlike other water filtration systems, Berkey purifiers are portable. They require no plumbing, and the elements don't have to be replaced.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Hello?
Hold on, we'll be right with you, Barry.
Oh, good.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to, but they are my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views, again, of Barry Shamish. And Barry's going to talk to us about the return of the giants. The return of the giants, and what are we to make of this? Now, Barry, of course, is a political commentator, but some years ago, in the early 1990s, he actually did a book on this subject. He did an extensive investigation of some of the supernatural phenomena that actually occurred in Israel at that time. So, without further ado, Barry Shamish, you pick up the story.
Yeah, well, I started researching in the early 90s. The book came out in 2000, when in fact this wave had already all but ended. Both from within, it was really hushed up. It was a top priority of the government using its media to just hush it up. And naturally, you didn't have the same number of sightings anyways by the year 2000. The wave was, in essence, between 1987 and 1999. But during those 13 years, Israel suffered a wave of aerial phenomena, as well as a personal contact with something that just didn't make sense. In the world we live in, it certainly didn't make sense. And I entered that world, and I went to the sites where whatever landed. I met the people, I got the videos, I took them to conferences on every continent, and it was a pretty big fuss made out of the Israeli wave. Now, ultimately I called my book Return of the Giants. Because most of the personal sightings were of giants, but it's not a question of just sightings. These are sightings with full corroboration, videotapes, and circles in their yards, 15 meters in diameter circles. And most of these, the giant sightings, took place from March 20th to the end of July of 1993, and the majority took place around the town of Kadima. So I thought we'd start with Kadima.
All right, let's go ahead. Because I think that, really, of course, you're absolutely right. This does not make any logical sense. And if it doesn't make any logical sense, then there has to be another explanation. Of course, I believe, of course, that there is a supernatural realm. We live in a natural, material world, but there is another element there, a spirit world, that some people, of course, can have had contact with. So you pick up the story.
Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but I wouldn't dismiss it.
Well, yeah, can you come up with a better explanation?
Well, there are other explanations, including that they flew from distant galaxies, you know?
Right, well,
I don't buy it for physical reasons. I'm actually closer to the spiritual realm. But I will talk about what actually happened.
All right, fine. Will you hang on there? Of course, our guest is Barry Shamish. And we're talking about these phenomena that occurred in Israel. We're going to do a series of programs on that. And I think that maybe some of you will want to see Barry's DVDs. We've seen them. You may want to get his book on the Return of the Giants. Is there really something out there that's intangible we can't explain on a scientific basis? You can bet your bottom dollar there is. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Barry Shamish, who's a frequent guest on Radio Liberty. He's an Israeli a writer, journalist, who had investigated what was going on in Israel for many years. He was forced to come to America because of threats on his life, because of his political writings and exposure of corruption in Israel. But today we're not going to be talking about Israeli politics. We're not going to be talking about the assassination of Rabin, and of course how he was actually killed, not as the Israeli people have been known, but or have been led to believe it by other sinister forces. Today we're going to be talking about something that is truly super, at least I believe it is supernatural. Be that as it may, Barry has written a book called The Return of the Giants. It was written in the early part of 2000, but it was based upon a series of phenomena that occurred between 1987 and 1999 over a 13-year period in Israel. So I'm going to let Barry tell you this story, and we're going to start with Kadima. This is a town in Israel where many of these events, supernatural events, call them what you will, where many of these events took place. Go right ahead, Barry.
Well, Kadima is where the giants landed, largely, most of them. And there was some sort of pattern. And I was there at Kadima over and over in these circles and talking to the ladies. And I got to know Kadima quite well. So we'll start with the giants. The first giant sighting, there's a series. I should add that whatever UFO made these circles in Kadima, it was filmed in 1991 in a farming village, a moshav called Pardesia, 2 miles from Kadima, by someone named Eli Cohen. So the landings of 1993... apparently were predated by a scouting expedition of some kind, but we do have a very clear daylight picture of the craft. Eli Cohen has a pretty good story. He was up and his house lit up and he thought there were burglars and he went looking for his gun and There were no burglars. He had a lit house, and he went outside and saw in the sky this disc. And next time he brought in some friends. This happened once before on the third time.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Barry is telling us the story of this fellow Elliot Cohen. Is it Elliot?
Ellie
Cohen.
Eliyahu.
Okay, and Ellie, of course, Iowa, one evening his house lights up and there's nobody there and he goes outside and sees some sort of a disc. This has happened a couple of times. Now he's brought some friends in the house and you pick up the story.
Well, and a video camera. They played cards all night long. The craft arrived at about 5 in the morning, and they have nighttime shots. And, you know, a nighttime shot is just lights. It's just a light in the sky. But the sun came up, and they got 30 seconds of excellent daytime shots. And again, it's what's to describe? It's a disc with a dome. But it's there for our records. It's a very famous film in that world. 1991. Now we go to 93 and 2 miles away. On March 20th of 1993, Tzipora Carmel, again woke up on a Saturday morning. And by the way, all these incidents take place on the Sabbath, on Saturday morning, which is another phenomenon that has no easy explanation. But she gets up at 6:20 in the morning for reasons she doesn't understand, goes outside, and she has a very large field behind her house. In that field, she sees first the craft. Now, she thought it was a fruit silo, that somebody had put up a fruit silo in the middle of the night. It was aluminum. Well, it appeared to be aluminum. Again, the 15-meter diameter is the approximate size, except her craft, as she described it to me and others, grew another story. She said this craft was sparkling and had lots of lights, but suddenly another story grew out of nowhere. That's how she tells it. Don't even ask what that means. That's what she saw. And then she turns left. She gazes left. About 4 meters away, 12 feet away, she sees what she describes as a 7-foot being. Who knows what he was doing outside the crop, but there he was. And the description of his clothing is, it's like neon, it's shiny. All the women describe this, by the way, same clothing. And it's wearing a hat over its face. She described it as like a sombrero with a veil, or a beekeeper's hat. And she said to it out loud in Hebrew, would you mind taking off your hat so I can see you? And it answered her telepathically. By the way, everyone said the same thing. It answered telepathically. Well, in the Hebrew, it said, no way. She said, why not? And it said, Kaka said, that's the way it is. These creatures were always very grouchy. You don't get any profound wisdom out of them. They have very terse answers. And this one just, the way Tzipora describes it is that she had a feeling that it was time to go back into the house. And when she came out, after a cup of coffee, the craft and the being was gone. She didn't report to the police, but a lady friend of hers, her name was Mayan, she told her about it. And Mayan was connected to the UFO community, and word started to spread when on March the 30th, she had another sighting. That's what happened to her on March 30th. She had the craft in her backyard again and so forth. I don't have to repeat that story, but this time the UFO community descended on her property. And in came equipment, magnometers. What you're talking about, there were two discs in her backyard. And I walked in them a year and a half afterwards. They were still there. Nothing grew in them. All the grass was brown. And this was a cornfield. It was orchard country. It was full of vegetation, but there were two spots, one where the craft landed the first time, apparently, and a second one which she insists is where the being stood, there was nothing a year and a half later in these circles. There are pictures of them in my book. Somehow it killed the growing potential of the soil, whatever happened there. But in these circles, and this is important because the same thing repeats itself, and you'll hear a bunch more stories from Kadima. In these circles were two physical phenomena, which I had tested by a TV show called Sightings. In its day, it was on NBC. I organized 5 episodes for them. Well, the two physical objects. One, you put your hand in the circles, and it came out red. There was some sort of oil. It had imbued all the vegetation with this red oil. I remember the first time I got this stuff on my hand, I didn't want that on my hands. I thought about it for a while, and I said, I mean, this stuff could be radioactive. I don't want it. And rubbing it off was a near impossibility. Even with soap, you had to rub and rub and rub. This was really sticky oil. But I collected some in a vial, and other people collected vials. And inside the circles, there were shards of a shiny metal or metal-like material all over the place. And, well, I have one right here with me. I collected them with everyone else. We collected these shards. But they were tested many times over, but originally by the Israeli Geological Institute, which said that they were almost pure silicon. I think it was 99.3-something pure silicon, which, by the way, is not found naturally anywhere. This is manufactured. To get silicon like this, it has to be manufactured. And back in 93, I don't even think they were manufacturing silicon of that purity, but nonetheless, it would have been a very expensive proposition to fill these circles with silicon. And loss of silicon would have been very expensive if it was a hoax. As for the oil, it was tested by the Sightings TV show of interest. It had, iron and aluminum, stuff that wasn't so surprising. What was surprising was a big jump in the graph at cadmium. Cadmium is not usually an oil. You make batteries out of it. Nonetheless, this oil was based on cadmium. That was the biggest element by far of its structure. So that was Tzipora's event. By the way, Tzipora is the only witness that I can recall. No, she's one of two witnesses that delighted in being seen, of having seen the giant and having this happen in her backyard. Everyone else rued the day that this happened to them. Bad stuff surrounded them.
How big was the giant that she saw?
7 feet.
About 7 foot, okay.
Yeah, they all reported the same size. 7 feet was the giant. The next visitation was near Tzipora on Hapamach Street, and this was with the town treasurer, no less, Shosh Yehud. Now, you have to deal with the personalities. Tzipora is from German extraction, and Tzipora is from Moroccan extraction. There are big cultural differences, but they both had, they both met the giants. But the reaction of Tzipora was far more guarded, and in a way, even more truthful in some respects. Tzipora might have gone off the wall a little bit with her excitement. But Shosh was dead down to earth as an accountant or town treasurer would likely be. Oh, by the way, all these women were 39 years old, and that's another thing that's very, very coincidental, without real good explanation. Now, Shorsha's story is she was sleeping. Her husband was slept on the couch that night, but none of the husbands of other cases recall seeing the giants, recall anything. They slept through everything. See, Borat was in her bed, and at first she thought she was dreaming, but nonetheless she saw a seven-foot being floating, by the way, not walking on its feet, but floating on them. Again, neon is how she described the clothing. A lot of people did that. Very silvery and shiny. Oops, I hear the music.
You hear the music, and we're going to be back in just a few minutes. But here's another example of the another Israeli who saw these a giant. And, of course, what are they doing? What are these discs that are appearing? Are they supernatural? Are they from another dimension? Are they from another planet? We'll be back in just a moment or two with Barry Shamish to explore these strange sightings of the giants. Go right ahead, Jip Barry.
Oh, that was not a few minutes. That was right back. All right. So Shosh is explaining that, let's describe its face. And again, all the women described the same face, all of them. Round head, no eyebrows, unprominent nose, unprominent mouth, bald, black eyebrows. That's how its face looks. Not quite human, but sort of human. Just round face without any prominent features, including ears that I recall. Nobody recalled seeing ears either. And immediately, and again, we will repeat the story. The being told Shoshana telepathically, "I'm not here to hurt you. Just relax," and she did automatically. Now it circles her bed, and really she doesn't remember much. But there are a couple things you have to keep in mind. One is that her blinds were these are electronic blinds. It's like walking through solid material. They were shut, and there was no way for this being to get into her room. It had to have come through the walls, which is one of the reasons I'm thinking this is not a physical phenomenon, unless there's a physical way of doing that, which our knowledge says there isn't. But who knows, maybe in 100 years. But nonetheless, this thing had to have come through her wall. That is the first sign of your spiritualism. It circled to her bed, and she doesn't remember. I think I know, or I suspect there was a little hanky-panky going on, and I'll explain why shortly. But she doesn't remember much more than that, except that she was itching all night long. Terrible itch. And that's her story till the morning. In the morning, she thinks she had a weird dream. She opens her blinds, and in her backyard, there is, a 15-foot, 5-meter in diameter circle. I have pictures of it. I was there a year and a half later, and it was still there. Her backyard was fully grown, high grass, except where the circle was. In comes the UFO crowd, and they take, samples from the circle. And once again, you have the silicon, and you've got the oil. That's the second one. Third one that I met, it's more interesting. If I met them, I know other stories, but Hannah Somach lives, oh, it's across the street from Kadima, in a farming village across the street. And, well, she, however I met her, and again, she's a woman in her late 30s, a travel agent, very prominent travel agent, which is important because you want to establish...
Hold that. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Christopher Berry tells us that this second case he's describing, the woman's laying in her bed, and this being, this seven-foot being, comes in and walks around her bed at nighttime. And in the morning, when she goes outside there in the backyard or someplace close by, is another one of these circles, obviously 15 feet, so something like that. And there's the red oil and the silicon there, and of course the people from the UFO groups are there and checking it all out. And there's no question that there was something there. She thought maybe she just had a bad dream, but imagine this guy walking around her bed at night. Her husband wasn't there. He was sleeping on the couch for some reason, but suddenly then, of course, the story gets out, and it's evaluated, and of course, Barry eventually goes to this area, and sure enough, there's this circle right there. And I have heard these stories from other people who've evaluated them, and nothing grows where these craft have set down. Something happens to the soil, but it's changed and everything else grows, but nothing grows there. So you pick up the story, Barry.
Yeah, I believe this was May of 93 when she had a really most unusual UFO story in its own way. She's in her kitchen at 3 in the morning. I should have asked her why she got up to go to her kitchen, but she was. 3 in the morning, by the way, was a very popular time for these visitations. And she's in the kitchen, and she sees her small dog go lift up in the air and go... It was barking, by the way, like crazy. That probably got her up.
Well, I'll tell you, when you see a dog, you know, levitating, why, of course, that's enough to get any dog's attention.
Well, no, it just... was lifted up and smashed into a wall. Smashed. And I'll go into it. These beings don't like dogs barking. That's not the only incident of that either. But she's there in the kitchen watching her dog go flung into a wall. And so she decides to go outside. She knows something is strange going on. Opens her back door and it's... And she can't move. She says there's a barrier between her and outside. She can't get through it. And she is staring once again at a 7-foot creature wearing the neon clothing, floating on its feet. By the way, the sightings crew had all the women draw the being that they had seen, and they were all the same drawings, the same round face and not very much nose and not very much mouth, and they all drew the same thing. Now, she is really ticked off at this minute because her dog has been hurt, and that's first on her mind. This being is looking at her truck, which again... What, you come from 8 light years away to look at somebody's truck? You know, they always seem to be doing very elementary things. And she says to the being, she says, "What did you do to my dog?" And the being turns and faces her, and she sees his face, and he says, "You're bothering me. Go back to your husband. Go to sleep. If I wanted to, I could crush you like an ant, but I'm busy." It threatened her. That's her story. This, far from imparting wisdom of the ages, telling mankind to stop nuclear tests or anything that, well, people I don't believe in the UFO world have tried forcing down our throats, that they were chosen with a message. This being just threatened her. He was really ticked off that she was interfering with him, and so was her dog. Needless to say, the next morning there is the circle, and it's the same size as Tiporet's circle and Shosh's circle, and she's got a 5-meter circle in her backyard filled with tar and silicon. All right, now it's her turn. Now, at this point, by the way, the sightings were so remarkable. I haven't begun to tell you of other things but Kadima. But Kadima was, well, they saw the beings. And in June of 1993, there was an hour and a half TV show. In those days, Israel had two channels. Maybe 60% of the viewing public was watching. Shosh and Tziporet were on the show. Hannah, I believe, was on the show as well. They were all telling the stories of the same giant creatures, and they showed Ellie Cohen's video of the UFO over Kadima.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this afternoon is Barry Shamish, and we're talking about the story of the return of the giants, and we'll be back here in just a moment with Barry as we explore this supernatural phenomenon. This is certainly cannot be explained by anything in the physical or the material world. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Barry Shamish. And Barry, before we go on, would you like to tell our listeners how they could get copies of your book, The Return of the Giants, or get your DVD on the UFO phenomena that occurred in Israel, and how they could certainly get to your website, how they could even invite you to come for a meeting, or to give a speech?
Well, Return of the Giants is sold on Lulu.com. www.lulu.com. There's a search box. You press books, and you can either write in Return of the Giants or my name. It'll get you there. My name is spelled C-H-A-M-I-S-H. That's Chamish. The website is barrychamish.com, but you won't find any, well, not very much Giants on that. That's politics. But I do have a DVD, and you have to phone me for that. If you want the DVD filled with Israeli captures of tremendously strange UFOs, as well as the sighting shows and so forth, just phone me. 904-315-8079. That's 904-315-8079. All right, let's go back to Chana Somach. Tonight we can only do Kadima, so we'll try and make some sense of this. We're at the television show, June of 1993. And besides Sipporet and Shosh Yehud, there was Rachel Gveta, a nice lady who lives in Moshav Porat, 2 miles from Kadima, who in the same period woke up one morning and saw that her dog's eyes had been removed. He died about a half an hour later. She went to the sheep pen. They'd all been sucked of blood and holes drilled to their jaw bones, and 6 dead. By the way, we went to the dump 6 months afterwards, and they were like a taxidermist had preserved them. They were in the same shape. And then her chickens, 3 dozen of them, frozen on the roof. They weren't running around, nothing. They were frozen dead on the roof. This also occurred in the same period around Kadima. And the show did a survey, and the vast majority of the people accepted that these women were telling the truth. And they, the show asked for anyone else who had similar incidents to phone them up, and they would be investigated by ufologists. And, well, that's how I met, well, if I'm not mistaken, that I know that's how I met Batya Shimon, and I think I might have met Chana Somach the same way. Chana is a very spry lady, very intelligent. They were all intelligent, by the way. They were all white-collar workers, all in their late 30s. Chana had the incident with the poodle, but when we went there, her place was filled with little circles. Her daughter, who lived 100 yards away, was watched by one of the giants. But the major information, she said when she was a teenager, she got pregnant. And then she lost it. And she had the medical documents that she was pregnant for 3 months or so, and then she wasn't anymore. And that was, to me, a major hint at what was going on. The sightings people ignored it. I didn't. I took the notes. And again, from the show, I meet someone not from Kadima, but pretty good story. My goodness, I didn't forget her name. Batya Shimon, a bank teller, again, except for Tziporet, who had a little bit of a flaky side. All these women were as conservative as you could ask for. She did not live in Kadima. She lived in Rishon LeZion, down the coast, by, let's say, 40 miles. But unlike everyone else who lived in detached homes with backyards, she lived in the seventh a floor of an apartment building, which, well, for one thing, it meant no circles, but the other thing is how they got in. She was asleep, just like Shosh. She saw a blue beam hit her face. She saw, well, it woke her up. And she gets up, leaves. The husband sleeps through everything, by the way. She looks in her living room and kitchen. There are 20 of them. She said a couple dozen, up to 20. She says they're everywhere in her apartment. Everywhere.
Now, what are they? Are these the giants?
7 foot, round face, wearing neon clothing, floating on their feet, the exact same ones.
Okay, go ahead.
And they're dusting, she said, with a very sulfuric-smelling powder that she cleaned up the next morning. And one sees her and tells her to get back in bed. She gets a telepathic message that we're not here to harm you, just relax. And she does, and she gets back in bed, and again, that's all she remembers. But the next night, she's got an even better story. The same thing. There's some sort of beam of light in her apartment. She opens the bedroom door, and there are two of them this time. Again, searching the apartment. Who knows what for? Okay, what was in the apartment that was so exciting? But one of the beings sees her son's aquarium and gets all excited over the fish and waves over his friend, and they stare at the fish. And she's watching this, and again, she gets the message, we're not here to harm you, relax, the whole thing. They dust and they leave the house. After dusting the shelves and the counters and staring at the fish very excitedly, they're out of the apartment. Now, again, 7 floors, and why her? You know, there are a lot of questions that aren't easily answered. What's a blue beam? How did they get through the walls? All these things we don't know. We just know from my book, by the way, if you read my book, I think I portray these people well, and you know that these are not in any way wackos. Now, I get a phone call. This, by the way, was the last of the current Kadima-era giant sightings. I will do another one shortly, but that's it. But first, let me add that Batya phoned me the next summer, and she said to me, she called from Los Angeles. She said, I'm pregnant. And I said, you know, congratulations. She said, it can't be from my husband. I won't tell you why, but I don't know where this pregnancy came from. And 3 months later, she lost it. So there was sexual stuff going on. There was very, come on, two women get pregnant and then lose them. In ways that they neither understood, is more than just a hint at something. It's a fact. Whatever it means, it's a fact. Now, this, in very short order, the book goes into a lot more detail, but this was the Kadima era giant sightings, and you ask why it happened then and why in Kadima and so forth. The first thing I'm going to say is the timing, and again, I can't prove this, but the timing was when the Oslo so-called peace accord was signed, was formulated, was in March of 1993. It was finished at the end of July of 1993, during these giant landings, the Oslo Accord, which has wrecked Israel. I mean, it's just simply wrecked that country. it was, well, for the Jewish people, again, there was nothing so rotten and evil and wicked as these Oslo courts. It's simply destroyed their country. Now, I went looking, first time I ever read the Bible, the Old Testament, cover to cover, and I was looking for recorded instances of giants, and there is nothing until, well, David's, I believe it was his cousin, Seth, killed a giant with six fingers and six toes, and that was it. That was the last recorded sighting of giants, 3,200 years ago until March of 1993. So if you read the Bible about these giants, first of all, the inhabitants of the Bible really did not make much of a fuss about them. Joshua sends his scouts into Canaan, and they come back with real fearful stories about alliances with giants. They don't scream, "You can't believe they're giants," nothing like that. They simply report that an alliance has been made with this town or that town with the giants. And if you look at the pages, how giants were formed, there were Nephilim, who God viewed as those that fell from his heaven, and they mated with human females, whom they found fair, and I assume the human females didn't feel that way. There's no recording of that, so we can assume rape. They raped humans, and they created the Anakim, or the Rephaim, which are the giants, the ancient giants. And, I mean, God really hated them. I mean, he ordered every trace of them destroyed from the earth forever. And wherever they appear, it becomes a divine obligation to get rid of the giants. Again, God really doesn't like them. If you read into it, their sexual practices, including bestiality, that there was a lot of bestiality going on before Moses. He didn't like that. And wherever giants appear, there is sexual. And we're not talking adultery here. We're talking gross sexual misconduct with your cattle and stuff. And he wants these giants removed. The Oslo Accord, and this is, again, my speculation, but the amount of evil that the Oslo Accord generated must have been enough to bring these Anakim, these giants, back while it was being written and finished. The timing is really uncanny. That's all I can say. It's really uncanny that the giants returned as Israel was being destroyed.
Well, probably they didn't come from eight million light years away. They probably maybe from this supernatural realm. At least, are you leaning in that direction?
Well, I'm thinking that it would be just as likely that they've always been with us, but somehow divided from us, and they cross over into our world or our dimension or whatever. During very special occasions. In the case of the Anakim, the special occasion apparently is evil. I mean, it's just raw evil, which the Oslo Accord was. That's the best I've got.
Well, I think it's as good as any. I mean, I believe there's a material world and a mystical world, a physical world, a psychic world, and there is a supernatural realm, and I've known people who could contact it. I certainly don't want to have anything to do with it myself, but I think it's important that people understand that there are certain things that we, with all of our intelligence, cannot explain as of being on a scientific basis. So pick up the story there.
Well, they use ships to arrive, that's a given. That's their means of transportation. I walk through their landing spots. One was enormous when the sightings crew came, a huge landing squad, I would say 30 yards in diameter, like half a football field or a third of a football field. So whatever they are, they use physical means of transportation. So it's just another one of the puzzles. Now I'm going to go to the last really well-reported giant sighting, and that is at Yitzhak, Moshav Yitzhak, which happened to be about 10 miles from where I lived at the time. I got a phone call in December of 1994 telling about a remarkable landing at Yitzhak and giving me details who I should meet. I took the kids with me. They were just little things, but why not walk in the footsteps of giants? Because that's what happened. Herzl Casentini was the town, not sheriff, but the equivalent. He was at his friend Danny Ezra's house. They were playing cards. When the house shook, Herzl described it like a giant truck passing, except no giant truck could get down these roads, again, on a Friday night, as always. And so Herzl gets up and opens the door to see what made the house shake. And standing in front of him is a 9-foot metallic looking giant. His face was covered with some sort of haze. He couldn't make out a face. But he opened the door and he's staring at this thing. He slams the door. He tells his friend Danny to look up.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
Right.
All right, you go right ahead with the story, Barry.
Right. So he tells his friend Danny to look outside the blinds, past the blinds, and look outside. Now, this is like a Three Stooges movie now. Danny takes one look at this giant, and he faints. Outright, he's on the floor. Herzl gets him up, gets to the phone, and phones I'm not sure if it was the police or the army. He was a sheriff of the town. I believe it was the army. Oh, it doesn't matter, because they didn't believe him anyways. A guy phones him and says there's a 9-foot giant outside my window. They're not going to exactly send a squad car out. But he tells him who he is, and he gives him his rank and the works, and tells him that I'm the Mephakeach, I'm the security officer of the village of Yitzhak, and they send a couple of squad cars, later followed up by the army when they see that there are tracks in the soil, deep tracks. That's what I took my kids to go and step in. They, by the way, these tracks were measured for how much weight would be involved in creating tracks almost a foot deep. Whatever that giant was had to have weighed a ton. I jumped on the soil again for the cameras, but I did this previously to see how far I could go into the soil. Now, the soil was wet. It was the winter, but I didn't get a millimeter into this very, very thick clay soil. But you have these deep tracks going for 8.5 kilometers to Keren Shalom, the next village over. Now, as for the tracks, first of all, the pressure point was on the sole of the foot. It went down about 30 centimeters, whereas the heel only went down about 5 centimeters. So this being walked in a form of tiptoe with the pressure at the front of its boot.
Well, Barry, we're out of time. We'll have to pick this up. We'll have to pick this up next week when we do this or whenever we do the next program. But he's almost sounded like he's on his tippy toes to appear taller. An incredible story. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, I hope you enjoyed Barry Shamish's story, The Return of the Giants. Now, he doesn't like to necessarily talk about this. He's more interested in politics, on culture, on the struggle taking place in Israel. And yet, of course, this is an important part of this whole issue because you cannot understand anything going on today unless you understand that there is a physical world, and there is this psychic world. There's a material world. There's a mystical world. There is a supernatural. We've got a great 4-tape set on the supernatural. I've talked to people I would stake my life on their validity who've told me that they've seen people levitating in their living room. Of course, these are people who were demonically possessed. We have a 4-tape set on satanic crimes and a book on satanic crimes. The information is out there. We hope you'll want to get it and understand that there is another dimension. It was certainly a unit, of course, to get the talk that was given by Johanna Michelson at our last conference. We'll hopefully have a DVD one of these days, but Johanna was involved very deeply in the supernatural. She witnessed 400 faith healings before she realized, of course, these were demonic. We carry her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. That's The Beautiful Side of Evil. We have a 4-tape set with a Father Malachi Martin, and of course, the wisdom of Malachi Martin, and of course, we carry his book, Hostage to the Devil. Why is it important? Because it talks about the story of at least 5 exorcisms carried out by the Catholic Church, documented by the Catholic Church, of the supernatural phenomena that exists. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are involved in a supernatural spiritual battle for the survival of Christian civilization, and you can't understand almost anything going on today. And as you understand that there really are spiritual forces, there have been secret societies going back thousands of years. They trace back to the ancient mystery religions, and they are being manifest today because the goal of the secret religious societies and the mystery religions has always been to create a one world government, and that is, of course, exactly what the people who control the Obama administration want. The Obama administration is controlled by the Trilateral Commission. There are only 87 members. You can go to their website, trilateral.org. You can get their membership list, or we hope you'll want to get our syllabus. It's called the Membership List of the Brotherhood of Darkness. And there we have the list of the members of the Trilateral Commission we got from the Trilateral Commission. And there you'll find at least 11, I think now 12, present or immediate past members of the Trilateral Commission are the people who control Barack Obama. He is simply a figure put up there, so you'll dislike him without understanding he is simply a front for the people who really run our country. And if you haven't seen my talk on the financial Armageddon, and we go into the Trilateral Commission, their control of our government, that the financial Armageddon is a syllabus that goes with that. We hope that you'll want to get Pat Wood's excellent DVD entitled The Trilateral Commission. It's the talk he gave at our last conference. These are all available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We carry a book called Alien Intervention, and it goes into the background of these supernatural phenomena, which are basically from the other dimension. there is another dimension. Certainly, we've been in contact with people who have been channelers. In fact, we have books written by channelers, people from the other side who've never come back. They really believe, of course, this is the true message. They believe that Lucifer is the true God. And, of course, this is the basis of the Gnostic religion. If you haven't, of course, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. If you haven't seen my talk on the Forbidden Secret, you need to get it, and the syllabus that goes with that. That's the Forbidden Secret. And then, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there.